We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Hey there, Knicks fans! How you doing? That's your boy, Jonathan Macri, with you for another episode of the Knicks Film School Podcast. I'm a little giddy today because I'm recording this Thursday at 4:40, and, you know, it's just one tire fire around the NBA before the next or after the next, and none of them are the Knicks, which is fantastic. So what better time for me to gleefully step into my favorite place, which is a mailbag, and it's only my favorite place because I get to step into it with the KFS representation of the youth of America. He is all things that we hope future generations can be and live and aspire to. Chris Percy-Einen.
My mother would be on the floor right now being like, how the hell?
I'm just noticing your shirt. We've been talking for like 20 minutes before we press record. It's a half of a Knicks logo. Is the other half like on the back?
No, it's just, that's it.
Okay. Is that what the kids do nowadays? It's just a half of a logo. Okay.
You got to pay double for the shirt.
That's great. It's a hipster thing. Okay. It's a hipster thing. That's all you have to say. Okay. So we are doing a mailbag. As always, I will preface this by saying I've not seen these questions yet because I, as always, am very busy, although I can take some guesses as to what they're going to be about. I don't know if I have to say anything else.
Rest in peace to the Dallas Mavericks.
Yeah, well, listen, they still have the... I'll save my thoughts on that because I have a feeling we're going to probably get a question on it. But I will ask you very quickly, you have now been done with college for a few weeks, right? For your freshman year of college?
About a month.
Okay. Sitting here right now, do you feel like you have already experienced the best year of your life, or do you feel like the best is still yet to come?
I feel like the best is still yet to come because I was there at game two.
This to a Knicks point.
And I'm like, if this is what the hell, I'm sitting there with Julito, shout out Julito, with Danny B, with Terry and Trey, with Ant. And I'm just seeing people from Knicks Twitter left and right. I'm standing up on a NYPD barricade leading a Let's Go Knicks chant. I'm like, this is one, don't worry, I represented the brand very well. This is one. Ant called me a white method man after my behavior at the game two.
Wow. I really don't even know how to process that.
So just knowing that that was one playoff win and that I have 3 years of non-COVID super affected college left and I'll be in New York City, I'm like, it might be one of those three, but at least it's ahead of me.
I love how your mind, when I asked that, I was just talking about like you're done with your first year at college. And like a lot of people, you know, sometimes think that like that's the best year of their lives. And you related it to a Knicks thing.
I do my schoolwork so that I can have time to do the Knicks stuff. I don't do the schoolwork because
that's why you are the boy wonder, my friend. Okay. Without further ado, let's kick this baby off. What's our first question?
Some people have some questions, John, for you specifically. Novocaine 2020. There seems to be a lot of concern about overpaying any free agent. Should we start to consider overpaying a premium and helpful free agent? Also, as an investment in the growth of our young guns, like to make it more palatable in regards to RJ, Mitch, Quick, and Obi, or do you just don't want to dole out cash?
I feel like I've talked a lot about this in the past, so I'll try to be brief. The concept of when you spend money in free agency, that the money goes away, this is going to sound stupid, is a silly concept. And the reason is because of the way the league works today. And like you can, when's the last time you could remember a situation where where a player wanted to go to a certain team and it was like, oh, they don't have the cap space, I guess we can't go. No, that's not how it works anymore. The key is, ideally you want to sign guys to marketable contracts that are going to be good value contracts. But even then, it's like, if the Warriors wanted to get off of, I always go back to the Andrew Wiggins example. Why? Because what is Andrew Wiggins? He's a guy, he's a good wing.
He's an average. Not just three. And he's like a three plus D wing. Yeah, no, but there's a little extra spice in there just three. He's not like Danny Green.
If he was a free agent this offseason, he'd get paid, 2 years, $30 million. So he's making double what he's earning. That's fine. As long as he's a contributing player and he could help your team, like you'll always find someone to take those guys. The key is, are you getting the right players and are you signing, like, you don't want to sign like obviously something that's going to be an albatross contract. I don't think that's a huge concern for the Knicks this summer. I will say that, like, of course there's a possibility that a contract is like just a stupid contract. Like if they go out and sign
like a 7'3" shooting guard to a 5-year, $158 million.
Yeah. But even they could, like, again, are you going to have to take back some less than ideal money if you want to trade Porzingis now? Of course you are. But you could trade anybody in the NBA. I don't think the Knicks should just sit on their hands and wait and just continue signing 1-year deals. If there's a player that can help them get to where they want to go, I think they should sign that player, and it's okay to give that money, that player, multiple years. I think the bigger question, it's something I discussed on a locker room recently, and I think I'm probably going to write about for next week, is what's the
green room now?
Green room. Sorry, I have to get used to that. What's the priority? Is the priority, because the Knicks need shot creation. That was evident in the series against Atlanta. And if you watched any Knick game this year, there would always be that 5 to 10 minutes.
We're going to come back to that statement in this episode.
What?
The Knicks need shot creation. Wait, no.
I'll save it. Let me make the brief point that, like, the shot creators that they could sign in this offseason are probably not guys who are the caliber of player that, like, are eventually going to start on a championship level team, but they could help the Knicks this year and they could make life better for like RJ Barrett and Julius Randle and whoever else like this year. And they may be able to, who knows, win the Knicks a playoff round this year.
The case for the player I'm thinking of that you're building in my head right now.
Well, but then the alternative, and again, I imagine we probably get a question about this guy, is Lonzo Ball. Personally, I think if you put Lonzo Ball in the Knicks and just had the same team and you put Lonzo on it, I don't think they're a markedly better team next year. If you told me they went out and won the same percentage of games next year as they did this year, I would be like, okay, that's about right. I don't necessarily think it brings them closer to winning a playoff series next year, but I do think Lonzo has the potential to be a long-term piece and a piece that they can, can grow with the core and the whole thing. It's just that he's not as big of a need. So the short answer is it's complicated, but no, I don't think they should sit on their money and be pearl clutching this summer. Like if a good player wants to come here and it's a semi fair deal, make the deal.
All right. Well, speaking of good players, gonna need some names now. Jacob the famous RJ Pete Quads season, wants to know, after having spent a lot of time thinking about star players to bring home up to the promised land, who our preferred role players slash bench pickups are.
Role players slash bench pickups.
Yeah, the other side of free agency. You know, we can talk a lot about Lowry, Paul, and all that, but
I mean, to be honest with you, I think a lot of them, their
Josh
best,
Hart.
Well, I was gonna say, I think a lot of our best free agent pickups in terms of like ancillary pieces are probably guys who are, I just would rather, like, I would rather re-sign some of the guys. Like, I would rather bring back Bullock and Burks than, you know, pay money to some of the ancillary pieces that are out there. That said, I'll give you some names that I personally like. I've said this a few times recently. I'll say it again. I'm going to be really curious to see what TJ McConnell's market is. I know he can't shoot, but he could do literally everything else you want. And I've, again, Elfrid Payton's shooting was an issue this year. I don't think
Make Elfrid the standard, but don't make better than Elfrid the standard. Better than Elfrid. I'm better than Elfrid. Like that's not saying like I'll go out and get four assists right now. I'll give it a Randall. I'll pass Obi Lobs and I'm already better. So yeah,
So the reason I mentioned McConnell is because the Knicks need a new starting point guard. Derrick Rose is not going to be the starting point guard next year. Emmanuel Quickley is not going to be the starting point guard next year. A rookie is not going to be the starting point guard. I mean, I shouldn't say that. I guess maybe if they draft one of the older guys. Probably a rookie is not going to be a starting point guard next year.
Cameron Payne? Thoughts?
He's fine. So if you're priced out of the market and you don't want to give whatever, and let's say Dinwiddie and Lowry and whatever and Ball potentially get stupid money, my wife and daughter are home. I would rather give potentially, I'm just saying for argument's sake, 2 years and $15 million to TJ McConnell than going and like spending $98 million on Dennis Schroeder. Like, I would much prefer that option. That's the only reason I mentioned McConnell here. Who else do I like? There's no chance that this happens, but I like Doug McDermott. I've always liked Doug McDermott. Not a perfect player, but I like him. I think Bryn Forbes is an interesting piece just because I think for as much as, Burks and Bullock were good shooters, I think Forbes is like kind of a more elite shooter, like his gravity and his ability to shoot off movement. That said, you could go hunting on him a little bit more. So, and I think he might get paid. And then people are going to hate this, but I'll say it anyway. Sometimes it's nice to have a bucket getter wing off the bench. Rudy,
is this
Gay,
who I think?
There's Rudy Gay. It's probably not who you're thinking of.
Hell out of here with Rudy. Malik Monk.
Oh God, come on. I mean, first of all,
no, God, me. We are gifted. Send something. Be shameless. We're the Kentucky pipeline. Do it. Malik, you want creation off the bench with Rose and IQ? There you go. There it is.
I don't want Malik Monk creating for me. I want Malik Monk
just
standing, because that's not efficient shot creation. I think Malik Monk is a nice shooter.
Yeah, but hand him to Johnny Bryant and Kenny Payne instead of Michael Jordan purgatory land.
He's been in the league for 4 years. Malik Monk is what he is.
I'm going to be ready for you to be wrong about this.
Hey, listen, he's a good player. God knows I've been wrong on our pods together before.
Oh, this is coming up later too, because you know who has a question about
it. I'm sure. But like Rudy Gay is a guy that, I don't know, maybe he signs for 1 year, $5 million or something. Maybe the Spurs want to just go full on youth movement. Like, that's a guy who could be a really useful piece for you. He's probably more of a four at this point, so I don't know how that works with Randall and Obi
Obadiah.
Here. But I like Rudy. And then, be curious to see what Redick's market is.
Get closer to Brooklyn.
That's the thing, is like, I don't like a lot. I don't really love a lot of these. Like Josh Hart. I like Josh Hart a lot.
There it is.
He's a restricted free agent though.
Send something, sign and trade Knox and some seconds.
Send something. But again, that's the thing about restricted free agency and why I've always been hesitant about like being like, we must end up with Lonzo Ball. It's not about paying Lonzo Ball. It's about potentially sending something to the team that has Lonzo Ball, which is
Lowry, Hart, Barrett, Randall, Robinson, Rose, Quickly, Moody, Toppin, Dwight Howard. Cry.
Oh my God. Please don't bring Dwight Howard anywhere near this team. Okay. Next question.
Good God. Buck, not from Milwaukee, wants to know when they see people talking about playing Randall and Toppin together. The talk is always Randall at the five. Why not Obi at the five as a rim protector on the back line? Obviously, there are a small number of legit fives that cause problems for our small lineup, but it's got to be worth a look at some point.
I completely agree. I always think of Obi as the five when I fantasize about Julius and Obi together on the court.
Mm-hmm.
Randall doesn't jump high. Like, he just, it's not a thing that he does. It's his ability to offer like negative rim protection when he gets close to the basket is astounding. And
he was a good defender this year. Like he really did help us, but then he's the rim protector and it's like, well,
no, it's literally the one weak spot, and it's a huge weak spot, because if he could offer any legitimate rim protection, he'd be a full max player without any question.
Yeah.
Cause then you just play him at the five, but he can't do that. So that's why he is what he is. Obi. You know, he's got the center of gravity issue is, I think, more a perimeter thing. But at the same time, like, I think he can get backed down. At the same time, we are now officially in an age in the NBA where there are how many centers that you really have to fear, like, backing a guy like him down if he's at the five? I don't know, Val, Jokic, I'm not even responding to that. Embiid, it's probably one more guy I'm missing, one or two more guys I'm missing. But like, what do you need him to do? You need him to be spry on his feet, which he showed the ability to do a little bit. You have some good awareness, showed the ability to do that, and you know, kind of offer some vertical deterrent at the rim. And I absolutely think he could do that. He clearly has the hops for it. Like, I don't see why that shouldn't be something they go to for 8 to 10 minutes a game next year in select situations. So yeah, 100%. Good question.
Next up, Chris Agar with a fun question about a player who I unironically stole a move from at pickup the other day. How does Luka Vildoza fit on this team? Can he be a rotation player or even the starting point guard? And how will he impact our offseason plans?
So this is one of those ones where I feel a little silly offering anything on, because how is anybody supposed to know the answer to this question outside of the Knicks organization? Here's what we know about Luka Vildoza, right? Luka Vildoza won MVP.
I'm an idiot. What? Yeah, no, I thought you were listing things. You were like one, and I was like one, and then.
I don't even know where you're going with this. Your mind works in mysterious ways. Whatever. He won like a finals MVP of the European league he's in, which is an award that had previously been won by some pretty good players. So we know he could play. I've watched a few of his games. Clearly he could shoot. Clearly he has creativity. He's a pest on defense. He looks like an NBA player watching the tape. He looks like a guy who, like Facundo Campazzo, out of necessity, but nonetheless, just started 4 playoff games in a pretty competitive playoff series. And he didn't look.
CJ McCollum couldn't guard him.
I mean, he didn't look out of place, right? Even in the Phoenix series. Like, I guess clearly they wish they would have had Jamal Murray, but, you know, he held his own in his own. And Vildoza's bigger than him. He's not maybe the passing whiz, but he's a better shooter than Campazzo. So, like, I don't know. If you told me right now that Vildoza was the Knicks' starting point guard next year, I'd be like, okay, that's fine. That's believable. And if you told me he got cut the day before the season began, I'd be like, okay, that's fine. Like, maybe they didn't like what they see in camp. Like, I guess the only part of the question that I can answer with some certainty is with some modicum of confidence, is that I can't imagine that they see enough in Vildoza this summer to be like,
we don't need to go spend money.
I was
money
about to say
it.
Like, who's a, you know, we could get Lonzo for, you know, 4 years and $60 million. And like, we know I don't pretend to know that this could possibly happen, but like, we know the
Pelicans for how
match.
Oh, okay. I was going to be like, he's not getting that little.
And that's what I'm saying. This is an absurd example where they have something present to themselves, and it's like, wow, it's a really good opportunity. But wait a minute, we really like Vildoza, so we're not going to go. They're not going to.
Yeah.
You know, but I do think it's actually a really good inquiry in terms of, like, let's just say again, for shits and giggles, all of their other free agent point guard options or trade options or whatever, they don't like any of the money or the parameters of those deals. And they're sitting there looking at, be like, okay, well, we could sign TJ McConnell for, again, whatever, 2 years, $15 million. Or we could trust Vildoza to be our starting point guard. That's interesting. I have no idea what the answer is, but
they'd sign TJ. And if they could sign TJ and didn't, Tom Thibodeau might actually kill himself.
But so I love TJ McConnell. But at the same time, like, Vildoza,
I'm saying, like, if they could have gotten him McConnell, and they're like, no, you're gonna be fine with Vildoza, like, he might quit out of spite.
Yeah, but listen, I have to say, but like, some, you know, we're done with the whole soft European label, you know, Porzingis aside. Like, that's bunk now. Like, this, like,
it was always bunk.
Well, I don't know if it was always bunk, but it's been bunk for a while.
Respect Finland, except for Lauri Markkanen. We don't claim it.
That's funny. Vildoza has been working out at the facility. Like, the coaches are seeing what they have in him. Again, they're not going to rest all of their, you know, postseason hopes and dreams on the kid. But yeah, who knows? Maybe it influences their decision making a little bit. That wouldn't shock me.
Not that. I wouldn't mind if he were good enough to be doing so. So, fine with me.
Like,
he
looks good.
Yeah, and the shot, and you watch him play, and he has a little spin around. He's got some moves that, you know, can do a thing in the NBA, and that's more than
he looks effort, like. So. He is an NBA player. Is he good enough to be the 25th best starter in the league, or is he good enough to be the 25th best backup in the league? I think it's somewhere in that range. We don't know where.
We'll see.
Yeah.
Next up, Matt at Aussie Nick fan. Knicks related, who has the best tattoos on the team?
Oh my goodness.
My answer.
My first gut reaction was Derrick Rose because of the Godspeed.
There it is.
Right? It's like, trying to think if there are any other candidates.
That's my answer right there.
Isn't Reggie? Reggie's a little tattered up, right? Hold on, I'm gonna look it up.
Reggie Bullock has I know he has leg tattoos.
Yeah, he has some leg stuff going on. He has some.
I think he did a sleeve. I think he did. Did he do one sleeve or both?
He has a sleeve.
He might have done both.
Oh no, he has both.
I think he did both. Yeah.
But no, I mean, look, J.R. Smith forever will be the GOAT.
The champ.
The champ. Like, that's – but Rose is
– And Melo. Melo had cool ones too.
Yeah. Whatever. It's fine.
That's got to be – I won't finish that sentence.
Non-Knicks,
what is the most overrated NBA championship of all time? I get to get John in trouble.
Wow. Why would you get me in trouble?
Because you're going to say something and people are going to be like, whoa. And then,
so the,
and then
the funny thing
get
about
to
this,
watch chaos ensue.
The funny thing about this question is there's no, okay. Let me just start by saying, here's how I interpret. Actually, no. So there's two ways to go to interpret this. You could look at NBA championships that have like gotten a lot of attention as being like, wow, this championship was worth more than a normal NBA championship. And then it's actually worth less. But I actually don't think, I don't know of many championships that are like elevated above. I mean, I don't know if this person is trying to get me to say like the Lakers championship last year, but I feel like the only person
who's 2008 to Boston.
So, but then the other part of it is like, what championships was maybe like the road?
You're welcome for that answer, Schwinn.
Was maybe the road to that championship like lesser than like other roads?
Should have said something that like you thought wasn't joking. I should have been like, that Dirk guy wasn't even all that anyway. Like, I feel like you old people think that ring was so cool. Like, I should have really pissed you off.
See, that's a but the Dirk championship is a great one.
No, that's an all-timer. I'm just saying I should have done some trolling. Let me really piss you off. Say Hakeem's while Jordan was out of the league.
Well, listen, I would put the second Rockets championship up against any championship because of who they beat in four rounds. So here's some names that came to mind.
No, I'm a huge respecter of Hakeem.
The first Heat championship, in which that was the one where LeBron had the game six against Boston, and he beat the Pacers, I believe, in the conference. Oh, I should probably look this up. I believe he beat the Pacers in the conference semis that year. I'll double check that right now. And then they beat the Thunder in the finals.
That was my first year watching the NBA.
What did I get that right? He defeated Pacers conference semis, Celtics games. Okay, yes. And then, oh yeah, they beat the Knicks in the first round. I had completely forgotten that was the team that beat the Knicks in the first round. Like when the most you're tested is by a Celtics team that was past their prime probably 2 years prior. I don't know how impressive that championship is. That's one that comes to mind. I have to say it, and this is going to be, this hurts me because the 99 Knicks are still to this day and will always be my favorite team of all time. But like the 99 Spurs team, they had to get past the Blazers at some point. And yeah, they got past the Blazers in the conference finals. But that was a 4-0 sweep. Who'd they get past in the conference semi? Sorry, I'm doing this off the top of my head. Yes, they beat the.
The machinations of Macri's thought-making machine is what the people want.
The Blazers were not ready yet. The Blazers were ready the next year, and then they choked away Game 7 to the Lakers. But that Blazers team was good. That Blazers team was good that 99 Spurs team beat, but they were not. So I would say the 99 Spurs are up there too. Let me get one more. Honestly, Lakers team that last year, that is.
Oh, that's a great answer. Why didn't I think of that right away? I'm a LeBron guy, but I think.
I thought the question was like.
Overrated. So many people crap on that ring. No, you're good.
That's no, but except LeBron doesn't crap. Well, LeBron wants us to think it's the most impressive ring of all time. Meanwhile, who did he beat? He beat a Miami Heat team that was like fine. He beat a Nuggets team that was fine. I don't even remember. Oh, the Rockets. You know what? That's probably the answer. Last year's Lakers. I did this whole runaround, and I'm at the point where the person probably wanted me to go from the beginning, which is.
I have a couple friends who will probably screen record you saying that and just play it every day to feed their LeBron hatred. So that was nice for them.
I'm glad I did that for them.
I'm a LeBron guy, but I understand that the bubble was. There was a reason so many random guys were going off is Yeah.
Look, he's the second greatest player of all time. What do you want me to do?
If you're a basketball junkie, then you know there's no better time of year than the NBA playoffs. Twice a week, JJ Redick is cooking on his podcast, The Old Man and the Three. He has guys come on in all stages of their careers to talk about the league and share stories you won't hear anywhere else, including Devin Booker on why he talks so much trash, Ray Allen's epic free throw competitions with LeBron in Miami, and the moment Tyrese Halliburton knew Pascal Siakam would be a good fit in Indy. In addition to player interviews, every Monday, JJ breaks down the top three things happening around the NBA with unmatched analysis, not outlandish takes, and is often joined by masterminds of the game like Tim Legler to dive deep on rookie reports, trade breakdowns, and why is mean mugging now a tech? You won't find another outlet that covers the game as comprehensively and with such insight as JJ does it on The Old Man and the Three. Make this your companion podcast during the playoffs. Listen to The Old Man and the Three ad-free on Wondery Plus or wherever you get your podcasts.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Next up, I won't argue that. Next up, Hernan Koren. What kind of player should we draft? It's a simple question. Follow up, which position is a priority to cover? But I really like the first question. What kind of player should we draft? Because that's something I want your take on myself.
A good one. I've been thinking a lot about this. Because where they're at in the draft, they're going to have they're going to have a couple choices. If they stay where they're at, which means they don't package their picks to move up, they're going to have a choice between some really high ceiling point guards and a couple of high floor point guards. And then maybe a point guard or two who have a high ceiling and a high floor. At least in terms of overall play, not necessarily as a point guard. I'm thinking of James Springer. They also are going to have the opportunity to like package the picks and maybe move up a little bit.
Springer, if he gets made to play wing, is going to be fascinating in the NBA.
Springer? I mean, if you're going to draft Springer, you're drafting him to groom him to be a point guard, I'm assuming.
Yeah, but I feel like look at Lonzo.
Yes. I don't know that I want to compare those two, but
I'm just saying like guys kind of get pushed out to the wing, whether it be nice, whether it be as a result of a lack of wing talent on the team or a lack of developmental staff. Like I feel like there are point guards who just get pushed off to the wing because they weren't brought up. They didn't grow up correctly as point guards. And that could happen. He gets sent to Charlotte or somewhere where like LaMelo. Yeah. You know,
here's what I'll say. And then I'm going to say this and then I'm going to go completely against it in mentioning a name.
Okay.
I think the Knicks should draft a player who, if you're watching and this is a Bill Simmons take, I'm blatantly stealing from him. If you're watching the playoffs right now and you're watching the last 5 minutes of these playoff games, these very high level playoff games, and a phrase I've used a few times lately, it's when it's nut cutting time. Who can actually be on the floor for you? And what does that mean in the NBA today? It means a guard or a wing who can put the ball on the floor, who could make the pass that's available to them on the move, and who could shoot. Or draft a five who could play in the NBA today. And what does that mean? Well, that's less of a priority for us as of right now, because we have Mitchell Robinson, right? We may have Nerlens Noel back. We may have Obi Toppin spending some time at the five. We may have my favorite player, Taj Gibson, back. All of those things may happen at the same time.
Eye roll was for Nerlens, just to clarify for my Mitch and Taj people.
But this is why I like the center situation is so complicated. Who's to say that they shouldn't make an investment in a guy like Kai Jones? Kai Jones is a center, a shot blocking prospect out of Texas.
Oh, you mean like an Okongwu type pick where we resign, where we extend Mitch and then also go out and draft like.
Well, but so I was actually going to say like, so he is there's at least a faint possibility where he could be a stretch five, like a real stretch five, a guy.
You want
a
stretch five? Go get Garuba.
Well,
Usman Garuba. You're not a fan.
I don't quite look
he's
at beat. Him. As,
he's stocky. I like it. He could.
Yeah.
He
see, I kind of like. I
he's
like
stocky Kai. And he can do things.
I like Kai a little bit more.
I shamelessly adore fat players.
Good for you. I was a fat kid growing up.
Kyle Lowry.
But like drafting a guy who you could groom as someone who protects the rim at one end and hit a three on the other end, even if you can't do anything else. Well, you need to be able to catch lobs also. But like that's an incredibly valuable thing to have in the NBA, and it allows you to do so much more stuff in terms of team building. And it's a guy obviously you could play in the playoffs we're seeing today. Is that a need for them? Maybe not. But again, it's a guy you could play. Like, but I say that, and then here's where I contradict myself. I look at a guy like Sharif Cooper. Sharif Cooper can't throw the ball in the ocean from the, you know, or from in the, you know, East River from the Brooklyn Bridge. But that dude has special, special, special talents that you cannot.
Like you watching Trey's passing right now, and like that level, you know, is like what I feel he can be at quickly.
And he will live at the line from day one in the NBA, and he will make your team better one way or another. Like he's intense as all hell, and like all of the things, right? Can't shoot. And if he doesn't ever learn how to shoot, like what's he gonna be? He might be a really good backup. So it's like it's just so difficult, and it comes down to how much do you believe in your development staff? Like, are you actually going to have the patience to stick with these guys and make it a 2, 3, 4, or 5 year plan? But yeah, that's my gobbledygook of an answer. I'm sorry if it was unsatisfying, but that's the best I could do.
Next up, Chip Murphy has a question, and this is going to give the name from earlier away, but we were talking about free agent shooting guards. I'll pose the question.
Oh, I know. I actually glanced at this today. I happened to be scrolling and I saw this.
And you were saying earlier how you can bring in a guy and he can help you be better. And why does Macri hate Evan Fournier?
It's purely
didn't even say I don't hate Evan Fournier.
No, but I don't hate Evan Fournier. I hate what it would cost to get Evan Fournier. So
the is 232 like nuts.
So this is something we disagreed on fairly vehemently around the trade deadline, where you were like they should give up 2 seconds.
Did the Atlanta series change your thoughts?
No, and here's why. I don't think if the Knicks had Evan Fournier on their team, it would have made any difference against Atlanta. I don't think like Alec Burks, the stuff that they asked him to do, and the stuff that quite frankly he actually did do in game one, fell off a cliff after that. But like that's the best you could possibly reasonably expect from Evan Fournier. Given how Alec Burks had acted all year. And how he was probably their most clutch player all year. Why did I need Fournier to basically do all of that? Like, did I know that Alec Burks was going to shit the bed in games 2 through 5? No, I didn't know that.
Right. My theory was always just like, if you can use Bullock, Knox, who we're throwing away regardless, and maybe a second, or just Bullock in 2 seconds, like, and then have Burks and Fournier on your team, you can stop. You can stop pretending that you like Alfred Payton.
I think there's a limit. Yeah, but they were never going to start. Like, it was always going to be Payton or Rose as the starting point guard. I don't think you need
that. Doesn't do it for me. That, like, I feel like if I have, I don't know, this is not me saying that I'm some like NBA crystal ball savant. I'm just saying, like, if I'm putting forward a theory of what an off-court decision might do to affect the on-court product, I'm not going to let, like, well, Tibbs wasn't doing, like, what, that we know Tibbs didn't play Frank. Tibbs didn't do a lot of things. And he also did do all the things that got us in the damn playoffs in the first place. But he's also not immortal. Like, we saw the Sixers make the adjustment we should have made with Frank after game one.
Listen, Matisse Thybulle's a different caliber of
Matisse Thybulle is Frank with a Philly cheesesteak in his right hand and a vlog camera in the left without the jump shot. So I don't want to hear it. So Frank doesn't suck.
Let me just say
Matisse sucks, and he made all defense second team. Well,
the foul on the 3-pointer last night was brutal. Again, for anybody who didn't see the game, it was Thybulle fouled Young on a 3-point attempt. That was the moment where you were like, oh, wow, the Sixers are actually going to lose this game. A couple other things on Fournier. In his two first-round playoff losses with Orlando, his slash line, he shot 35%.
Who is taking defensive attention off him?
Listen, 35% from the field in both series. First series, 23% from three. Second series, 34% from three. It really, though, I didn't want him at the deadline because to me, they would have been giving up the 32nd pick in the draft. And I would rather have the 32nd pick in the draft than Evan Fournier because I trust our infrastructure. I trust Walt.
Friends. My guy.
And the other thing is, like, if you trade for him, then it's like, okay, great. You're going to keep him, right? You're going to pay him. I didn't want to pay him. There are other guys that I'd rather, like, invest my time and money in. I'd rather, like, hopefully Emmanuel quickly can play in some way. Because what is Evan Fournier ideally? Ideally, Evan Fournier is your spark plug off the bench. You probably should not be starting Evan Fournier. Who do I want to be my spark plug off the bench moving forward? Emmanuel Quickley.
Why isn't Quickley good enough to start? Why is that ceiling? I don't know why that ceiling's on him. Don't do that.
Because he's not. Listen, I
hope. You did it with RJ. Learn.
I never said RJ was learn. Good to start.
Learn from your anti-homerism.
Listen, if Quickley can become more of a playmaker and like emerges as that next summer and he could be a starting point guard, I mean, my God, would
he
that
is be so fucked.
That would be amazing.
It's not a rookie deal.
$2 million a year. Okay, next question.
God, I love the future of this basketball organization. Last time from Ari, that you had Vork on the pod, he mentioned how Randall's transition and finishing numbers were poor this year. If the Knicks finally get, and I'm going to myself put this in quotes, a true PG, can Randall return to being an off-ball finisher slash role guy? And to what point are you worried that peak Julius only comes when he runs the offense?
I'd be lying if I said I wasn't worried about the second thing. Mm-hmm. And specifically because we saw him play, you know, 30 some odd games with Derrick Rose. And I've said this before. I never felt that those two guys fed off each other in a way that we see really, really solid NBA partnerships feed off of each other. Now, granted, they didn't have a training camp together. They never played together before. Rose was here for a few weeks, and then he was in COVID protocols where he couldn't practice with the team, and then he was back. So it's like, you know, we take that stuff for granted. And more to the point, we saw it took over a year for Julius to develop the only real kinship. Well, no, actually, he developed kinship with RJ more in the second year than the first year, for sure. And the only real elite kinship he had with any player on this team, Reggie Bullock, again, that did not come right away. That took a while to develop. So I guess all this is to say I do have faith that if you put the right guy around Julius, he can learn to be more of that finisher. In terms of the finishing numbers, I know what they are. They are bad. The transition stuff, I don't worry about as much. The finishing stuff is a little concerning, but I think in the right, I don't think that goes away. Like I saw that guy make enough tough baskets this year to feel like if you put him in an offense where he's not like the finishes he missed this year. It's not like he was, it's not like there were a ton of times where we looked.
It wasn't at him. Brandon Knight blown layups. It was.
I was about to say, it's not like
he had guys on him that were actively trying to stop him from making the shot that he was trying to make, and then he sometimes missed.
Like there,
it wasn't a wide open fast break. Yeah
there are players you watch miss shots around the rim. Like, oh my god, how did he miss that? Like, I never really felt like
Alfred.
Well, not to name any names. I never felt Alfred. Like that was the case with Julius. So Peyton. I think that'll be fine. And, just get him a real point guard. Just get him a real point.
For Obi too. We've been talking about this for Obi as well since we drafted the kid.
For sure. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, but Rose with Obi against backups, I think we saw, you know, the glimpses, obviously.
Three questions left.
Okay. Let's get them done.
No, I just won't say anything. All right. How do you think the Knicks go about improving the wing for 2022? Or do you think there's a strong possibility of both Bullock and Burks returning from Zach Pokorny? I asked this because I was interested in the second part mostly
for
the listeners.
I don't think so. Because for Burks and Bullock to both return, I think I don't think that they're going to pencil.
Opportunity cost.
What's that?
Like the opportunity cost of just like not improving. You're the lowest payroll. Go improve.
Well, no, but I mean, those guys are going to cost more money. But RJ and Quickley are part of the plan. I don't think they're going to slot in Quickley as a point guard. I think they're going to count on him as being as a shooting guard. And then if you bring Bullock and Burks back, it's like, okay, you're basically bringing back the same wing rotation. And I think they know that they need more shot creation on the wing or more something on the wing. So I only think one of those guys is coming back. I've gone back and forth with who I think it will be. My gut feeling is it's
AB. Probably
what?
AB.
You think it's Burks? It's funny. I mean, look, neither would shock me. I think it's probably Bullock. I think Tibbs is going to push for Bullock big time. You know, but we'll see. In terms of who else I could
spent all year telling people that were saying Bullock should be out of the rotation with Peyton that they were wrong because what Bullock did was valuable on this team and valued by Tibbs. And then now I don't give a shit because there are better basketball players that can dribble. And they not only can they dribble, they can also pass. And then they can do all the stuff that Bullock was doing already. You can sign them.
Yeah, but but those players cost a lot of money. And like there's not a whole lot of wings that can shoot and dribble and pass and defend.
Okay, Alex Burks can do all of them except defend. So like Reggie Bullock can, and then like he defending at the Trey Young was slow walking to the rim. And
yeah, but Burks is also
doing what he wanted.
There's a modicum of there's a reason Bullock started and Burks didn't. There's a modicum
because he needed the creation off the bench and the off ball defense that Bullock provided.
I respectfully push back. There is a modicum of consistency that you get with Bullock game, and you would not know this unless you just watch 72 Knicks games. And I understand he came up small in the playoffs because he could not do the thing that they needed him to do. But if that is a separate conversation, then him as a game-to-game guy that you could just plug in and be like, we know we're getting 30 minutes of this every night. Whereas Burks is a little bit more up and down, which is why Burks is always going to be a bench player. But here's the thing about Bullock. Just because you resign him does not mean he has to start. He could come off the bench. And I agree with you that someone else who could do more stuff than him should be the guy who is starting. The issue is I don't necessarily know who that obvious candidate is.
Bring back Burks, replace Bullock with Hart, because Hart can rebound. Yeah, that's another thing he can do. He can do a thing. Okay. Eight of them a game. Eight of them a game.
Fine. That's very nice. Like, honestly,
a Leon guy.
To be honest with you, I'd rather this will be met with pushback. I'd rather than bring back Bullock, slot Bullock in as the starter, and draft a guy who they actually. I mean, we'll talk about this probably on another podcast, but my dream would be for Keon Johnson to fall and then pack.
Oh my God. Do we agree?
Yeah. You know, but who's to say they don't draft, package to go up and get Moses Moody?
I've pointed out the connection. Tom Thibodeau's first ever job involved him spending up to 14 hours a day talking hoops with his boss, Bill Musselman, who is the father of Eric Musselman, who is the head coach of the Arkansas team where the Moses guy plays. And yeah. I like the Moses guy because he can do the defense and then also do some of the offense. And
Moses is really good. So that's
those basketball things. Well,
that's probably what I'd really like them to do. Because again, there's just like some of these other wings out there. Like, do I want the Knicks to sign, Kelly Oubre Jr.? No, I've said my piece on Evan Fournier. All of the other guys out there are restricted. Norm Powell's. I like Norm Powell a lot. Norm Powell.
I'm super on that. I think Tibbs would run to the golden buzzer to offer him 80 mil, and I don't think I would.
Like, don't diminish the ability of that dude to get you buckets efficiently. He just doesn't pass ever. He just doesn't pass. He's a really good player.
The flip side is if you're going to Tibbs to New York City, like, you're going to learn to play in that on that team.
Yeah, but I don't know. Like, I haven't seen Norm Powell play like a huge role in a really high functioning offense. We've seen him do special things individually. And obviously I don't want to belittle what Toronto has done the last few years, but like, there's a reason that Norm Powell was like kind of low key out of the rotation with the Raptors for a few moments there over the last several years.
He's also just I'll defend him and say that even though,
look, if they gave him four for 80 tomorrow, I'd be cool with that. Because I think it's a tradable contract.
That's it. All you needed to say was tradable. That's it. I'm in.
Yeah, it's a tradable contract.
All right.
Maybe not. Maybe not 4 for 80. Maybe like
72.
It's like 4 for 64. Okay. What's next? Yeah.
Can I ask a mailbag question really quick? Just a yes or no.
Very quickly.
2 for 55, Kyle Lowry.
Depends what else, what other opportunities are out there.
Boring. The answer is yes. All right. Schwinn's question.
Gun to my head. My answer was yes also.
Schwinn's question. Where does RJ Barrett now rank among the Knicks' most valuable trade assets?
That's easy.
In comparison, where would Caris LeVert rank were he a Knick?
This is a good question. RJ's number one.
This is a good question.
RJ's number one.
No, it's not.
No, it is a good question. RJ's number one.
It's a funny question.
RJ's number one. He's ahead of Randall. Where would LeVert rank? He would rank below Randall.
RJ, Mitch, Randall, all more valuable than LeVert to me. Toppin?
Well, no, I'm assuming I'm not factoring in RJ into this question. Like, if you replaced RJ with LeVert, where would he rank? He's below Randall. He's below Quickly.
Robinson.
I don't know about that.
Say it.
I don't know about that. I'll actually. This might be a hot take. I'll put him below Obi. I was that encouraged by what we saw from Toppin over.
Me too.
Over the last bit of the season.
I guess, LeVert.
So here's the question: if you could trade the 19th pick in the draft for Caris LeVert right now,
no, do it. Hell no. No. Give me the guy on a rookie contract who I can. No, hell no. I'll take Trey Murphy. And if I'm a contender, I'll take Sharif if I'm rebuilding or somewhere in the middle. The deal that LeVert is on is not worth entering yourself into the world of those medical problems just for a player who.
Well, it's not about the
has medical been 26 problems. For 8 years now. And
it's not about the medical problems as much as it's about. Again,
him not that how being, much, being that how good much, at basketball.
How much does he raise?
I'd rather have Dinwiddie.
How much does he raise the ceiling of your team? Dinwiddie would do more. If LeVert is starting for you and monopolizing that much of the offense, is he enough of a playmaker really raise your ceiling? Like, I don't like those are the very valid questions about LeVert, unless, you know, you have him come off the bench and basically be try to be Jordan Clarkson. Obviously, he's not a good shooter. But then it's like, okay, well, what's that?
No one can be Jordan Clarkson besides like they're like that's a I respect him, man. That's a role that like. He's really good at. That's where I think D'Angelo Russell will end up, is like in that same.
Well, that's what he should end up as. All right. What we have
last question.
Last question. And then we have one last from Andrew, which I have to ask.
Oh. No, we'll get into this first. So Tyrese wants to know if you've ever heard of Lil Keed. You have, no, but
who that is.
All right, so you've never heard of Lil Keed. Lil Keed is an artist that Tyrese and I enjoy.
Lil Keed?
No, that's the Marvel show. Lil K-E-E-D.
Keed?
Lil Keed.
No, I don't know who Lil Keed is.
The song I sent you had him on it.
Oh, I didn't know that. I'm sorry.
And then on a separate note, you'll see some check marks on this post-it.
Yes.
Because I listened to Who Am I? I thought it was something I would absolutely like play in the car with my sunroof and windows open and summer day. And okay, I listened to Deport Them.
It's actually Deport Them, but
a little less bouncy, vibey, but it was the time. It was a good couple minutes and I didn't it was Dutty Wine. Very entertaining, certainly more than Deport Them.
Damn.
Deport Them. Busta Rhymes.
I gave you two Bustas, right? I gave you Put Your Hands Where My Eyes Can See.
Put Your Hands Where My Eyes Can See and Twerk It.
And Twerk It. Which of those do you prefer?
I think Put Your Hands Where My Eyes Can See.
Well, I should hope so. It's one of the greatest songs of all time.
Okay, so I picked right. And then Noriega was last super selection. Got some tunes, John. Got some tunes.
I love it. Thank you for doing that for me. We have one more question from Andrew. So Andrew, he's usually on these episodes, but he's in the process of moving this week, so he's not. So here's his question. Well, I don't think you trade this season for anything. Was there any part of either of us that watched Durant's performance on Monday and thought, damn, if only this guy was in the
lineup? Shut up. Get the hell out. Andrew, I hope you drop a cardboard box, dude. Get the hell out of here. I would not trade the emotional goddamn journey that the 2021 New York Knickerbockers took me on.
This is very inspiring.
You can't, because it was an all-time great playoff performance. My friend's dad, Mr. Insana, was there, reported. He said KD just hadn't seen anything like it in his life. I don't trade. Yes, you do technically. If you can literally trade this team for Durant, Harden, Irving. Okay,
that's the thing about
that's so question, far right? removed from reality that I'm just like I'm so my heart is so full with like, this season.
Here's the thing: if it's an alternate universe and Durant came here and Kyrie came here and whatever it is, and we were sitting and we were watching the Knicks with the Nets roster do what this Nets team is doing, and the Nets across town had just had the season that the Knicks had, would any Knicks fan be sitting, you know what, this being up on, and we're recording this ahead of game 6, so I have no idea what's going to happen, but like this being up on Milwaukee 3-2 and being a game away from going to the Eastern Conference Finals and probably being the favorites to win it all, this is all pretty nice, but you know what, I wish we just had the season that the Nets had. No, none of us would be saying that. That's just reality. What we're really talking about here is do we still have like active regret or angst or any other negative emotion over the fact that Durant and Kyrie decided to go to the team on the other side of the river? And the answer is no.
I got drive-by cursed at that day. Did I ever tell you this story? I was walking Russell, my dog, in a Kevin Knox jersey. And somebody in Northern New Jersey rolled down their window and had some choice words for the team I was representing. And some choice words, but like, you know, choice when you go buy like really nice meat from the deli for the Nets, because that was, you know, I would think that was the team he supported. I've and gotten drive-by harassed before and by a Net fan for this. Good, and I still wouldn't. Yeah.
Good for the 87. You know, this is good times for them. But there's no more regret or anything knowing, like, I'll say this in all honesty, I'm so happy I don't have to root for either of those guys. Kevin Durant just had maybe the greatest playoff basketball game of all time. I was texting Andrew earlier today about where he ranks on the all-time list. He's probably, if he wins it this year, he's probably in my all-time top 10. I can't take any of that away from him. But like, what, there's probably nobody else in the league who could do what he did the other night.
Oh no. All-time top.
But was there even an ounce of me that watched that and was like, oh,
Jordan, LeBron, Kareem, Shaq, Magic, Bird.
So you want to? I'll do it. I don't have time for this because I gotta go get.
No. I'm trying to just quickly myself. Like, there's gotta be.
I have. I did Duncan, this with Andrew earlier.
Duncan and Bryant both over Durant.
So here's my. You want my list? Here's my list. So in the last four, this is not exactly in order. I would probably quibble with this, but if it would be Jordan 1, LeBron 2, probably Russell, Kareem in some order, 3, 4, probably Wilt 5, Magic and Bird.
Thank God.
Magic and Bird in some order, 6 and 7.
I think Russell over Hakeem. I know I'm 19, which is why I can make statements like this, like just haphazardly. I think Russell over Olajuwon is blasphemy.
Okay, so that's very nice for you. So Magic and Bird at 6 and 7. And then here's where my list gets probably a little controversial. I have Shaq at 8, Duncan at 9. And then my next 3 or 4 or 5 are currently the group of Durant, Kobe, Curry.
I was going to say Curry over Durant.
Oscar and Jerry West. You probably throw Moses Malone in there as well. So like Durant, for me, if he wins this year, he goes unequivocally above Kobe, above Curry, above Oscar, above West, above Moses, above Olajuwon. If you want to throw Irving in there as well, if you want to throw Garnett in there as well, you're making some kind of a face. I don't know.
How do you put him over Curry?
How do I put Durant over Curry?
On an all-time list.
Because I think you have to look at, so Curry had 2 years.
When they were playing together, NBA teams actively chose to let Curry beat them over Durant. Let Durant beat them before they let Curry beat them.
Curry had two years, I'll give him both years, where he was arguably the most dominant NBA force that the league has seen, I don't know, since what? Will Chamberlain? I don't know. Whatever. He had those couple of years. And he had several other years that were very, like, that were all-NBA, you know, borderline first-team all-NBA type years. I don't know that we're going to have that as of right now. We have the track record for Curry in terms. And again, I'm not belittling what he's done. I'm just talking about when you're talking about him versus Kevin Durant. When Kevin Durant has been unequivocally a top three player in the league for a dozen years, unequivocally, like there's no argument about that. So that's pretty good. And again, this is premise on if he wins it this year. That would be his third title. It would be, you know, presumably his third finals MVP. If he wants to, he'll probably, you know, get to second or third on the all-time scoring list. Guys are really good. Really good. All right. Are we done? Anything you want to plug and promote before I go get Subway with my family?
Hey, nice. I'll never forget the time we drove to Philadelphia and we ended up eating Subway. That was our local. Yeah, my family. Listen, Danny B and I just hosted a Twitter Spaces last night. I've never done that before. And that was fun. So whether it's on Clubhouse, on Nick's House, on Green Room with KFS, on Spaces with Danny B, I'm around talking Knicks all the time, and that's a lot of fun for me. So whether it's on my podcast, on To a Tolerable Degree, on my page at Chris Persianian on Twitter, don't try to spell it. It'll be in the bio, the description of the video. I like to talk about basketball. That's the thing I do. That's about it.
And you're very good at it. And for anybody listening who is a subscriber to the Knicks Film School newsletter, keep an eye out. Chris is going to be a guest contributor on the newsletter a couple times over the course of the summer, hitting probably some draft stuff, hitting some big other big picture Knicks stuff. Definitely go listen to his other pods. He's very good at this. And he's very young, which I'm, of course, very jealous of, which is why I give him shit. But anyway, that's it. We hope you enjoyed this episode of the Knicks Film School podcast. We will be back with you for some more fun games and tomfoolery very soon. Peace out.